Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Nate, I wouldn't call it shocking news that Seth Rollins is still champion after his title match tonight on Raw against Jinder Mahal. What I want to get your take on is, did they do a pretty good job getting something out of this sort of match out of nowhere? Seth on his promo explained, or he tried to explain why he is defending the title against Jinder, saying he's a fighting champion and every match makes him stronger. He didn't quite make as compelling of a case for why Jinder deserved it at the beginning of 2024, considering Jinder's non-existent record over the last year. But then they had their match, and Seth is good, and Jinder is Jinder. He's a professional. He's in the right spot at the right time. Not the most dynamic wrestler. One of the least dynamic title reigns since, like, Al Perez's World Class Championship Wrestling run with Gary Hart as his manager in the dying days of World Class. So did they pull it off? Was it watchable and decent, or where are you on this?
I mean, I think they did. I think they pulled it off. Like, you know, Seth Rollins and Jinder Mahal, I mean, on paper, like, to me, it doesn't seem like it's, you know, even main event of Raw worthy. But at the same time, you know, Jinder Mahal is a former WWE champion, whether, you know, you want to admit it or not. You know, I kind of like the fact that they are starting to build him back up. I really like Indus Share, you know, covering NXT. I got to watch them quite a bit. So I like the faction. I like the three of them together. They're a pretty imposing team. So kind of getting built back up and putting them back in this position, Jinder in this position, especially, you know, I'm for it. I think it was a decent match. You know, as you said, was not surprised that Seth Rollins walked away with the title here. Quite a few, you know, false finishes and things. I'm not a huge fan of the way it ended, you know, with Seth kicking out of the Colossus and all of that. It just seemed like Seth had to kick out of everything that Jinder could throw at him before he finally got the win with one curb stomp. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it was a passable match. I'm a little concerned about Seth's knee. Like, I don't know if it was a work or not, but I didn't like the look on his face as they were closing the show. He was clutching his knee and he was kind of like looking at the ref a little bit. And they kind of, as he was doing that, they cut away from him real quick. And I don't know. I'm really hoping he really didn't tweak that knee, and that's we will continue to be able to see him as champion.
Yeah. I assumed, but it doesn't mean I'm right. I assumed it was a work, and it was meant to create a sense of jeopardy late in the match for Jinder to get a near fall where you could go, oh no, you know, it's another fluke win for Jinder because Seth tweaked his knee. You know, the replay didn't show definitively either way. Certainly there wasn't any, I mean, he just did a moonsault, and if his knee was hurt, it's because it, you know, his foot hit the mat awkwardly.
It was actually the move before that, because I went back and I replayed it, and
he does a
springboard off of the outside. It does like a senton onto Jinder, and when he comes down, both his knee, his left knee hits first, and then his right knee hits on top of it, and it, like, he lands awkwardly, and then he goes up and does the moonsault immediately after that. And it was like, ooh, I don't know if that's what did it, or if it really was like part of the show, because it seemed like it was probably part of the show. But then there were a few things in there that I'm like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I obviously hope that it was a work meant to add drama to the match.
Yeah.
And Seth just does a convincing job, as a lot of wrestlers do these days, selling an injury. Could be a storyline that is ongoing also, you know, where Seth's got the bad back, but now he's got the bad knee, to, again, create more of a sense of jeopardy with him. I think, go ahead.
Yep. I was just going to say 100%.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to think of like what the value would be in making more out of this than, Seth tweaked his knee, it was in pain, but now he's fine. Because, you know, they've already played up the storyline that he's just a broken down champion with his back problem. So, I mean, you can argue both ways on that. Again, I just and well, no, soon enough, word will get out. That, you know, one way or the other, I've texted a couple people in WWE just who may or may not know also, you know, just about that as we've been talking here. So I'll let you know if I hear anything, but, yeah. So to me, I mean, going back to kind of my question to you, I thought it was a serviceable match. You know, I mean, Jinder does what Jinder does. And there's not a high ceiling for a Jinder match, but he's also not a disaster. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. So you kind of get, what you're going to get from him. And, you know, you come back from the break and it's an abdominal stretch. It's like, you know, you're not still at commercial break and like another minute goes by or whatever. It just you've got a window of 14 minutes here. Just pick up the pace, you know, keep it moving. But I give him credit. I thought that there was a dramatic fall near the end, that the crowd kind of bought into a little bit. So, yeah.
Yeah, there was a moment there. It's a fall that I'm thinking of right towards the end. I think it was like with maybe a little less than a minute to go. I was like, ooh, if Jinder might actually get this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know better, right?
But exactly.
But
exactly.
The goal of a match is to make people at least lose themselves in the drama of something unlikely, possibly, maybe happening. You know, even if you know better, you just want people, you want that, like there's that second and a half in your mind during the pin, and if it's convincing and there's enough excuses built in for someone who's not supposed to lose, there's that part in your head that says, could this actually be a jolt that they, you know, a booking stunt that they're going to do, and they're going to just have chaos leading into going into the Royal Rumble, and then Seth's going to get a rematch against Jinder and win it back. You know, all those thoughts just rush into your head if they're doing their job well. Not everybody's had, but fans were kind of thinking in a meta sense, would they book this or not? The job is make people doubt their certitude when they think a finish is inevitable. So I think that's, you know, I think they succeeded in that way. They didn't succeed in having a 3.5-star, 4-star match by any means. But, you know, I mean, Seth's good. And I think they did a decent job with it. Now, I will say, again, very preliminary reports, but off camera, Seth was being helped to the back. And everyone was helping him afterwards. I don't know if that extended backstage or not. So we'll see, because obviously that's going to shake things up, you know.
Yeah, because, like, because, I mean, you know, again, you know, if this is like a legitimate angle or legitimate injury, rather, the look on his face as they cut away to end the show, it to me looked like it didn't look like somebody who just won a championship match. It looked like somebody that just went, oh, crap, I just blew my knee out again.
Okay, I got to go back and look at his facial expression too. So again, I mean, most people are, you know, we're live streaming. Most people are going to be listening to this after definitive word gets out. So why don't we wait for a little bit more info and we'll go back to that when we hear more. And again, like I said, I've got until I get some information back. And as soon as I do, I'll pass it along. I'm trying to multitask here. So let's shift to that opening segment, Nate, next. Actually, we'll pause to introduce the show, and then we'll shift to the opening segment between Drew and Cody. I thought there was a lot of substance to that, and to wrestlers with histories that they pulled from their common history. And I thought it was an effective and just good kind of centerpiece segment for this show to open things up. So we'll get to that. But first, let's go ahead and pause and introduce ourselves. Is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, January 15th, 2023 or 2024. That's the first time I've done this. And it took till January 15th. And that's because I'm multitasking here as I'm trying to text and introduce the show. I was wondering if that was going to happen. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. We are live on Monday, January 15th, 2024, covering Raw. Just a few minutes after Raw concluded, and talking about the Royal Rumble hype really heating up with only three more major shows to go, SmackDown, Raw, and SmackDown, before the event a week from Saturday. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and a whole podcast network. And the other voice you hear is Nate Lindberg. He is a podcast participant and a writer for PWTorch.com. Nate, Welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thank you for having me. It's always always good to be here. Nate Lindberg PWT Talks NXT is the show where you'll normally find me on the PW Torch Daily Cast covering NXT about a half an hour or so after NXT goes off the air.
Yeah, so talk a little bit more about what you guys do with the NXT show and with tomorrow night's show coming up. Just give a brief couple talking points on what's coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow, we'll be of course, I'm thinking about Raw. I'm not thinking about NXT right now. So I don't even remember what we've got coming up tomorrow. I know we just had Obafemi. Obafemi became the North American champion after cashing in his breakout tournament contract. So I'm hoping we'll get a little bit more on that next week. Obafemi is, if you haven't heard his name yet, big dude, really charismatic. He can move in the ring, and he just became the North American champion down in NXT, like right off the bat. So really looking forward to kind of seeing where that goes. Got some really great stuff going on with the tag team division. Get a brand new tag team called Out the Mud. So we'll be talking about that and a whole heck of a lot more tomorrow night. Same kind of format as this, where we'll take your calls and your emails and talk about what's going on in NXT.
All right, very good. If you want to join our show tonight, if you're live streaming it, I invite you to call us right now. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, if you want to be on the show, push 1. That flags you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the program. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at, oh, I said it wrong too. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. See, this is what happens when I'm reading text while going through the motions. You can email us at WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Don't send to the @pwtorch email anymore. We have switched to Gmail just because it's a more reliable spam filter and your emails will actually get to us for a couple months there. It was falsely labeling a lot of emails as spam and we weren't getting them and I feel really bad about that. And so we're just going to go with Gmail and we should be getting your emails reliably. So that's WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Okay, so we have breaking news here. I assume not storyline. When you first brought it up, I hope Seth's not really injured. I was like, I just really don't think that's the case. But now I've got two sources telling me legit injury to Seth. There is concerned backstage report is he is able to walk on it. So he is able to walk on it. He was being helped, and it's something. So the hope is it's not serious. You know, you can – end up, I mean, I know about this. I had my famous incident at the dog park a month ago where, you know, I even went into orthopedic doctor to get my knee checked out the day afterwards because I could barely walk. And, they did the tests on it and they said, no, just a bruise. You're going to be fine. But all the symptoms were there of something more serious, a tear in a ligament. And I was fine. And I lived for a few days and was better. So hopefully Seth is fine, but we'll explore the possibility if he's not too. As we talk here, since we probably won't get definitive word on how bad it is. The good news is he was putting weight on it backstage. And so everybody's just, you know, fingers crossed and hoping that it's not too bad. So what if he's out and he can't wrestle for 6 months or longer? Like, what if he misses WrestleMania? What happens then? And again, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because hopefully the news is good and we find out tomorrow it's a bruise or, you know, a tweak and he's, you know, they're going to sit him out next week, but he'll be fine. But if he's out, what do they do? Do you do a quick tournament? Do you have a battle royal for a title? Do you just give it to Jinder because he was the last one to score a 2-count on him? Nate, what's your kind of rapid fire on the fly thought on what WWE's B plan would be?
Yeah. You know, I would almost want to see like, I don't know if they would want to do something with Jinder, although now that I'm kind of thinking about it, Jinder, quote, took him out, right? He could tell Jinder could kind of play it up like he took out the champion, so they could kind of build him up a little bit more there and kind of build some heat around Jinder. potentially, you know, we've obviously got Damian Priest with the Money in the Bank title. There's Cody Rhodes kicking around as well. So I'm wondering, like, if they would do, you know, say all of a sudden it's next week and they announce, you know, he's going to be out for 6 months. You know, I don't know if they would wind up doing a tournament or if, you know, potentially, wow, I wanted to call him Nick Aldis. Why can't I think it's on the tip of my tongue? Adam Pearce. If, you know, maybe Adam Pearce would wind up putting together a triple threat or something like that between like Cody Priest. I could even maybe see Shinsuke getting in there because Shinsuke, if they wanted to have Cody, it kind of is part of that angle, you know, and maybe finishing the story, if you will. Shinsuke and Cody, they've got a thing going on right now. I love what they're doing with Shinsuke, and I feel like he's somebody that could easily be in. I mean, he was fighting Seth for the the World Heavyweight title for a while, so he could easily be, you know, be in that spot. So they could go to a fatal four way there. But that's just what comes to my mind off the top of my head, you know, as we're kind of thinking this through with this news. But yeah, it could certainly get a little interesting. I'm almost like there's even part of me that's like, I wonder if maybe calling an audible in the ring and maybe having Jinder win or having Priest cash in would have been a better idea. But obviously Seth, you know, doesn't really know.
I'll push back on that because I think the hope still is he's okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If Seth knew he tore it, you know, like if he knows he's been through injuries, and if he knew that he did some real damage, and you know, it's just one of those situations, then I would say, you know, Seth might get word to the ref, who might, you know, then send word to the back, and then Paul Levesque's going to make a call to maybe augment things. But I don't think there was that certitude that the injury was that bad. But even then, do you want to give it to Jinder?
Right. Yeah. Because that's what I was thinking, you know, maybe like something with Priest or something, you know, audible, although they wouldn't have had the time. They were, so that match came right down to the wire with time.
Got it.
But yeah, so, you know, yeah, unless Seth really knew earlier, because that was about, I think there was about maybe 10, maybe a little less than 10 minutes left where I think the injury happened took place.
I think it's more like 3 minutes left. I think it was even late. Yeah, I think it was quite late.
Maybe. I know there was a little bit of time left. There's a little bit of time left. But yeah, I don't know if they would have necessarily had enough to really make it meaningful if they did call it there. But yeah, a lot of things to think through. A lot of things to think through.
Yeah. Yeah. So we hope he's fine. Obviously, you know, I mean, you want to just stay on course. If he's not, yeah, then they're going to scramble. And then suddenly that CM Punk, Seth Rollins feud, and, you know, presumed match, leading contender to be a match at WrestleMania, takes a twist. And then, you know, what do you do? Yep. All right. So, again, we welcome our listeners to call us and give us their thoughts on that. In fact, we will bring Sean from Murfreesboro into the conversation now, get his take on things before we move to other topics. Sean, good to see you on hold. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Well, Wade, Nate, it's always good to be on here. Thanks for taking my call. Nate, it's always good to talk to you, man. Absolutely. Glad you're on here.
You as
yeah,
well, sir.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. No, with Seth, you know, hopefully, again, like you guys said, hopefully he's not seriously injured. That would be a really tough blow for him, knowing he's already been through a lot of these before. That would be really unfortunate, especially knowing the way they're going for the Mania match, I think. I do not. Well, I want to say with the main event, it was fine, like you guys said. I'm not into Jinder really at all. I mean, I like that he's on the roster. I'm glad they're giving him a chance, but I mean, the match was just kind of was what it was. I mean, I knew when Indus shared, you know, was there, they were going to interfere in the match, and it was like, you know, it was fine. As they should, by the way,
you don't want Jinder holding his own against Seth without a little interference, given, you know, how little Jinder has done, no matter what he did 7 years ago. You just don't want him doing, holding his own against Seth, I don't think, unless you're really made the decision to push him big. And even then, you've got to question the decision to push him big. But go ahead, Sean.
Right.
I know.
No, No, you're fine. No, you're fine. That's exactly right. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I knew when they came in, you're obviously going to have interference. And it was fine. It was, I mean, probably a little too much interference, I guess, but it was, you know, it was okay. If Seth doesn't, let's say, you know, like you were saying, if he can't wrestle, I mean, I would assume a four-way for Roman's title. I wouldn't do a fatal four-way. I don't love tournaments, but I think in that sense, I would build a tournament just because you can build a lot of people up and make it feel important and make a lot of people have a lot more suspense into who could win it. And, you know, they wouldn't have done a tournament initially. So, like, if that you're on the fly, I think that's the easiest way to do it is just kind of tell some stories with some people and kind of build to something like that. I think that's probably what they should do. I have no idea who would win or anything, but I think that's where they would go. I wanted to talk about Drew and Cody because I'm glad you were waiting. We're going to talk about that because I was kind of thinking about that too. When I thought it was a really good back and forth between the two of them. I love where Cody is right now. Some people hate Cody. I love Cody. I love where he's at right now. I think he's in a really good spot. The Drew stuff is just so intriguing. That's why I wanted to talk it through with you guys and kind of see where they're going with Drew because he's all over the place, but in a good way. Like we're assuming he's turning heel. I think that's where they're ultimately going. But I love that they're getting there. Like, he's telling Cody, oh, you know, you're telling everybody, you know, how you basically saying you're being the spokesperson for WWE, but that's what Drew was for a while. You know, maybe not in the same way, but he was, you know, during the pandemic era. And he did a great job of doing it, but Cody just kind of took it. And he's basically talking about Cody kind of taking his spot, you know. But then, of course, he's saying that, fault that he lost the match, which we all know it's his fault because he, you know, put Seth's leg over the rope, and that's what caused the stoppage in that sense. And so he's just, you know, giving all these excuses. But I just love the back and forth. So I wanted to hear you guys talk more about that and kind of where you think they're going because I really don't know where they're going with Drew, but I'm intrigued. I just love his character. I love the story they're on with him right now. So what'd you think about the promos between the two of them and kind of where do you think they're going?
Yeah, so Nate, I'll throw to you first. I kind of, in my introduction, kind of put it over a bit a few minutes ago. I want to get your take on the exchange and really what stood out to you that you liked or perhaps didn't like.
Yeah, so you know this was obviously a pretty long segment to open the show. I want to say it was like at least like 11, 12, 13 minutes, something like that. But I thought it was really compelling. You know, I'm also a big fan of Cody myself. I've got a big soft spot for the Rhodes family, I guess. But you know, I love what Cody's been doing. I mean, really ever since leaving and leaving WWE and, you know, kind of finding his own way outside the company and all of that. But, I think that, you know, they've done a pretty good job with him, you know, building up to this point, you know, kind of talking about, although, you know, I don't know how many times you can say finish the story without it getting a little old at some point, but that's a nitpick. But, you know, this promo, opening promo segment between he and Drew McIntyre, I thought it was great. You know, Drew is also somebody that I feel like he is, personally, I like him so much better as a heel. I think he does some of his best work as a heel. I've never been able to really buy into him. I don't want to say buy into him as a baby face, but at least for me, it hasn't been – it always just seems kind of manufactured with him for me, you know, with the baby face push. But when he is able to kind of tap into a mean side and kind of tap into that old Drew Galloway from the indies, if you will – that's, I think, when Drew starts to do some of his best work, and we've started to see that. I think kind of shades of Drew Galloway over the last, God, I want to say 2 or 3 months. It's been a little bit now. You know, and I think that's the direction they're going to kind of keep going with him. I figured they'd get there kind of a full-blown turn by now, and it still hasn't quite happened. But I thought this back and forth was pretty good, you know, especially I think it was the last time that they fought, you know, Cody was able to take the win and was able to pick up the win over McIntyre. And he alluded to that tonight. I think that was probably my favorite part of the promo because it kind of like cut the legs out from under Drew, which I thought was kind of a good thing for the babyface, got the crowd behind him a little bit more, got a good pop on that. And, you know, kind of just, I think also, you know, if I put myself in Drew McIntyre's shoes there, right, you know, kayfabe shoes anyway, you know, I'd be pissed. I just want to kind of, you know, get at him a little bit more. So, you know, I really like the way that they kind of had everything, you know, staged out tonight, and the direction that they're going for both of them.
Yeah. I like the pulling from their history, that they both took time away from WWE, yeah, stopped short of talking about his success in TNA, and stopped short of being very specific about what Cody did. But he did, you know, reference legit stuff that happened with them outside of WWE on their journeys. And I like that. I mean, I think that's the right way to pull reality into storyline, is having the wrestlers talk about things that the fans have seen and know about in this era. You don't want to pretend nothing happened during the years that they were gone, but I thought they walked a good line of not like putting over too much the other companies that they worked for. I also really liked the reference to the match that they had when Drew came back, and then Cody kind of saying at the end who won, noting, you know, he's the one who won. I thought that was a nice kind of parting shot. The other thing that I really – oh, and by the way, Jason Paul looked this up over on ProWrestling.net through CageMatch.net, that the match they referenced was from April 30th, 2017. It was a WCPW match in Coventry, England. Drew had worked some NXT matches, but he had commitments to wrap up on the indie scene there, and he agreed to do before he resigned, and Cody was a free agent at that point, and that's when they wrestled. So I believe that's the context and timeline of it. It's cool that they have that backstory that they can draw from. The thing that fascinates me most about this is how Drew manages to continue to tell the truth, and you're sort of like nodding along, and you're going, yep, I agree with what he's saying. But then he finds a way in the end to kind of turn you against him. Sean, I want to throw to you and get your thoughts on how that played out and what your emotions were watching him. And if you too, like as I did, the artful way Drew makes his case. But then in this case, Cody just had this great comeback, which is, you know, I'm not bitter, and I'm not saying if this didn't happen and that didn't happen. So even though Drew is speaking the truth, Cody one-ups him by going, my heart and the fans are what drives me, not bitterness over unfortunate incidents in the recent and distant past. So go ahead, Sean, your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like when Drew talked about even, you know, referencing Jay when he brought Jay back. Like, why would you bring Jay back when the whole locker room hates him? But, you know, we know what Cody's perspective is on it. He's like, I want him to come in because I see what happened, and I see that the bloodline was manipulating him. And even though they were family, like, Jay was kind of the odd man out. And so Cody was trying to, you know, would try to make him feel welcome because he wants to help him out. And Drew, knowing he's been a good guy for so long, you'd think he would understand the same thing. But no, he's just like, got this hatred, you know, like, I'm hating him and I'm doing all this stuff. And then talking about, you know, don't have to be, you know, like, bring up the politician stuff. And then Cody, like, you know, you said, bringing up the stuff about, I just like how Drew, you know, I thought the same thing. I saying good things, but then it's like, yeah, I mean, we know we brought Jay in because we want to help him. You know, we want to get him on the right track, and he's got a good heart, and Cody saw it, and, you know, Cody is doing the same things that Drew, again, was just doing a year ago, and Drew now is just making excuses for stuff happening instead of just looking himself in the mirror and saying, hey, that's my fault. I lost, you know, all this kind of thing. And so Cody's just saying what everybody's thinking, but Drew's the only one that's not seeing it for some reason, which, again, is why I assume Drew's eventually going to fully go heel. But, and I want to say, Nate, I mean, I love your point of view on Drew. Like, I just think I love Drew better as a babyface, but I know this side of Drew was going stale and he needed a change. And this is a great way. And this is where, you know, Paul Levesque is telling great stories with these people, and I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, I love what Drew did tonight. I love what Cody did. I thought it's now when they get to the Rumble, it's going to be bigger when they meet in the Rumble. It's going to be even a bigger deal. And so, you know, does Drew eliminate Cody? You know, what's going to happen. That's more intriguing to me too. So I really enjoyed that part of it as well.
Yeah, Nate, follow up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's – I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to kind of say the base, kind of based off of what you guys have already been talking about. But, you know, I've really loved the direction they've been going with Drew. I think the coming up towards the Royal Rumble, I'm really curious to see, you know, how he's going to affect the Rumble. And, you know, because, like – coming out of the Rumble, going into WrestleMania season, like, is he going to be factored into a title picture? Is he not going to be factored into the title picture? That's kind of, you know, not really sure about that or not. But yeah, you know, with him and Cody, I think everything out on, like, everything they've kind of alluded to on the indies and everything, I think is just, it's a great story to kind of play off of and build everybody up, you know, a little bit more towards this feud. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think the assumption until Rock showed up was Cody against Roman Reigns, Seth mm-hmm. Rollins against CM Punk, and then the talk, you know, started, well, wait a second, can you do a WrestleMania if you have access to Rock and not have him in the main event against Roman? So then is it a three-way, or does Cody get sidetracked? If he's sidetracked, who's the cause of it? Today, with what happened with Drew, you know, you can say, hey, maybe WWE is setting up a Cody-Drew feud that will be sort of a placeholder to get Roman and Rock out of the way at WrestleMania, and then Cody will – the can will be kicked down the road, so to speak, to say SummerSlam for him to ultimately win. Will that be okay? Or maybe another pay-per-view. All these international settings are, to me, elevate some of the B-level – branded pay-per-views to higher levels.
Yeah.
If it's stadium shows in an international atmosphere. I mean, if Sami Zayn, you know, ended Roman Reigns' reign in Montreal, that would have been an amazing moment because of the crowd heat there. Drew, you know, I made the case at Clash at the Castle. That was an amazing time to crown him and elevate him. Had they done it, it would have been better because it was in an international setting with an intense crowd, and sometimes these stadium settings add a lot of gravitas to these events. So I think, again, WWE's giving people a story to believe in, which is, well, maybe Drew and Cody battle in a semi-main event at WrestleMania. Tonight's segment can set that up. I still think it's going to be Cody against Roman at WrestleMania. I don't know that. And I think if Seth's healthy enough, it'll be Seth against defending against Punk. So, yeah, then where does that leave Drew? So does Damian Priest turn babyface by then and feud with Drew in a rematch, what's going to be on Raw next week? Are there other options, or do they insert Drew into the match with Seth and Punk and make it a triple threat? I don't know how people would feel about that. I would love it, but, you know, I'd be open to seeing if they can mitigate my negativity towards it with really good build. Sean, I don't know what is in store for Drew, but he's doing really good work on the microphone right now. And I find his character really compelling. It, you know, the term Shades of Grey, I think, can be used too much, too widely, and without a full accounting of how Shades of Grey to me is synonymous with ambivalent crowd reactions. but if you use the term in a different way, which is there's Shades of Grey with how you feel about Drew when you watch his promo, but in the end, he always makes you root against him. You know, the vast majority of them root against him because in the end it comes around to him being whiny or blaming the past and not shaking himself off and moving forward. And so there can be shades of gray in the case he makes as long as in the end the final note of his promo or his exchange with the babyface isn't, oh, maybe Drew's right. No, you want to end with, ah, Cody has the right attitude. That's the type of attitude that I like. And they pulled that off here. So I'm intrigued with Drew's character, and I hope that what they do with him, I hope that they make him a priority in WrestleMania season, wherever he ends up landing. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. Cody's just, like I said, is the centerpiece babyface right now. He's just, to me, he's killing it. I just love where Cody's at. I don't care. There's, you know, the what do you want to talk about or, hey, guys, what do you want to, I mean, I know that gets a little overdone, and I can understand that. I, you know, they could get away from that a little bit, and he could stop doing that. Like, I would be fine with it. But the fans are, you know, they just kind of, they laugh at it. It's fun. You know, he's so with them right now that he can do no wrong, and I think it's just fine where he's going. And even if they, like you were saying, if they go, you know, with Drew Cody in the meantime, and then they push it to stop, as long as they tell a great story, I'm all for it, whatever they do. As long as they get me to buy into it and invest in it, I'm okay. But where I was going to go was to Rhea and Becky, because I was not expecting that tonight. I was not expecting that. Their feud intrigues me so much. Like, Rhea is such an alpha female right now. Like, her just, like, mommy's on top. Like, I was in the Rumble for an hour last year, and I'm, you know, like, you don't want to – if you win the Rumble, don't fight me, because I'm always going to win. And then Becky comes out, and she's just so compelling every time she's on the microphone. Just the way she said, I think I'm better than – you know, I'm better, but I don't know if I can beat you. You might be better than me, and I got to prove that you're not. Like, I was just like, this is awesome stuff. Like, I don't know where they're going at the Rumble as far as is Becky for, and I was talking to Nick about this too, you know, is Becky going to just eliminate Nia during the Rumble and win the Rumble and then just say, you know, I'm facing Rhea? Or do they just have Becky and Rhea just do their thing and somehow build it a different way but still get to that? I love their little, it was a small promo, but it was really good. I got really invested in it. I want them to wrestle at WrestleMania. I think it's going to be just a phenomenal match. And so where do you think how do you think they did with the way they went about that tonight?
Yeah, the dramatic pause and looking down and then, you know, saying there's this voice saying that you're better than me. And now I have to prove that voice in my head is wrong. I thought really good. It was another good standout promo exchange tonight. Your thoughts, Nate?
No, I completely agree. I mean, you know, Becky and Rhea both, I mean, they're absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal talents on the mic, well, all around, but, you know, including on the mic. So, you know, I'm really kind of like intrigued by this. You know, these are two of probably my favorite female wrestlers right now, you know, Rhea Ripley and Becky. And so to see them kind of, you know, be able to potentially share the ring some more I'm all for it. You know, I wasn't necessarily expecting to see Becky come out either tonight, you know, at least in this segment, but I think it certainly worked. I think it was very compelling. I really, really liked the character building, character development, you know, Becky saying that, you know, she's not sure she said that she thinks that Rhea might be better than her, you know, as you guys were just talking about, but she needs to prove that she's not. And I think that's great storytelling. I think it's really, like, to me, that's exactly something I could see Becky Lynch saying. Like, not, I don't think it's like everybody could go out there and go toe-to-toe with, you know, Rhea Ripley and say exactly what Becky said and have it still be compelling. But it being Becky, being probably, you know, one of the other one of the other most dominant women on the roster, saying that I don't know if I can beat you, that's very compelling, and I'm hoping that they lean into that.
Yeah, Sean, anything else you want to add to what Nate just said there?
No, I'm with you guys wholeheartedly. I'm so excited about a Rhea Becky WrestleMania match. Like,
yeah,
you know,
and
everything about that just makes I'm in. I'm bought in completely, 100%. I hope they just tell a great story Rumble to build up to that. I love the little video package for Nia. It wasn't a lot, but it was just effective and put Nia over strong and just like building to whatever they're doing with her. You know, again, I don't know where they're going, but you know, I'm with you, Wade. You know, I'm with Nia, what they've done with her. I think they've, you know, whether you like her or you don't, I do for what she's done. And I think, you know, she's going to put somebody over, like you said, and whoever it is, I don't know, but it's going to be fine. One question I had about, I haven't loved, you know, obviously the women's tag team division, they have not done a lot with, and we've all kind of thought that for a long time. But it is kind of cool that they are trying to build a lot of women's tag teams up. I just don't think it's hard to really buy into a lot of them, you know, with Tegan and Natalia, it just kind of feels like, oh, the crowd's not into it. They haven't really told the story. You know, Natalia's just kind of, she's not, you know, over the hill, but it's like Natalya kind of is what she is, and Tegan even with her, like, nobody knows a lot about Tegan. They haven't, they've told her story, but not, she just doesn't really connect in any really real way right now, which is kind of sad, but with them, it's just kind of weird. And then, you know, Indy and Candice, like, they lost, or they won over Chelsea and Piper, but they've kind of defined Chelsea and Piper. I think they could have done more with them. I feel like I want to see more out of the women's tag team division, because I think if you have it, you could get more out of it, but they just haven't done a good job. What have you thought about what they're doing with putting new tag teams together? Do you think there's any chance they could go anywhere?
Yeah, Nate, you're a good person to talk to about this, because it just felt for a while like we're getting a lot of NXT recent alums in the women's tag team division. Talk about everybody who's involved in this and who you think is getting a push they deserve, who has promise, who you're looking at and going, ah, they're getting more out of them than I would have thought they might have. You know, now that certain acts from NXT are united, and then there's some sort of mix and match acts too.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, so, you know, first off, you know, we just kind of going right back to what Sean was saying about Tegan Knox. Tegan is somebody that I think she's a great, great wrestler, but one thing that we've, I mean, God, going back to probably even shortly after the Mae Young Classics and things like that, you know, when she came back from her second knee injury, you know, who exactly is Tegan Knox? We know she's got the shiniest wizard, but does she really? That was really, you know, and she loved Kane. She was Lady Kane, and she had a shiny wizard. And that was her gimmick in NXT. And they've elaborated on that a little bit in on the main roster, and kind of, you know, made her a little bit more colorful and stuff. But yeah, you know, she really doesn't seem to connect with any, you know, connect with the audience. Natalya, as much as I love Natty and I respect the hell out of Natty, you know, she's not getting that pop either, you know, with this team, with Tegan Knox. I'm not, you know, it's not a team that really, I don't know, really stands out to me as, you know, a team that could potentially, you know, win the women's tag titles. Now, granted, caveat being, Natalya is part of that team. So, you know, with her tenure and everything with WWE and, you know, whatnot, it wouldn't surprise me if she won it with Tegan, but probably not. I'm a huge fan right now of Kayden and Kayden. Wow. Katana Chance and Kayden Carter. I still want to call her Casey Catanzaro. So since the Katana Chance name keeps screwing me up, a year and a half, 2 years later, I think they're a phenomenal tag team. I'm really glad that they're in the position that they're in right now. You know, as the tag champs, so they've got a couple, you know, got some people coming for them. Chelsea Green, Piper Niven, like, I think I love and I hate what they're doing, but I hate it in a great way. You know, Chelsea Green just gets under your skin. So annoying. Piper Niven, just plays a great heavy for her. You know, as she even did for, you know, I can't believe I'm about to bring her up, but even Marie, when she was playing Dewdrop, yeah, she plays kind of that great heavy background character, and she does it really well. So I'm kind of digging what they're doing there with Chelsea Green. And I'm trying to think, I know there was a couple other people that I wanted to talk about that they're completely escaping my brain right now. But
maybe Shane and Zoe.
Long story short. Oh, Shane. Yes. That's exactly who I wanted to talk about. Shane and Zoe. Thank you. You know, Shane and Zoe, like, out of all of the tag teams, the women tag teams right now, those are the two, like, if, you know, you were talking about real combat sports, those are the two that, I mean, I'd be watching and I'd be, you know, I'd have my eyes on. Yeah, obviously Shayna Baszler, amazing competitor, a little underutilized on the main roster compared to NXT, I think, but whatever. And Zoe Stark, you know, she's another amazing talent. You know, again, I think maybe a little underutilized on the main roster from NXT, but I think she's still got plenty of time to shine. I really dig that tag team, that pairing. I just kind of wish I still don't feel like the crowd's super behind them. Maybe more so than you know, some others, but I think it still doesn't feel like the crowd's super behind them. So, you know, but yeah, overall, like, know, it's still kind of a bit of a weak division, unfortunately, but, you know, hopefully we'll see a little bit more light shine on the division and kind of see it get cleaned up a bit.
Sean, who's somebody in the women's tag division, a team or an individual wrestler, who you, in 6 or 12 months, based on what you're seeing now, think they should be protecting now in order to push more, feature more, not necessarily as a main eventer, but who do you think is sort of a keeper in terms of being more of a weekly fixture on television? And you don't have to limit it to one person, but who jumps out and how long is that list?
No, there's quite a few. I mean, I still think they could do more with Piper. I know they've really defined her down, honestly, in a lot of ways. But I think if you just get her off TV for a little while, honestly, for me, and bring her back and tell that story with her, even what she did in the Mae Young Classic, like, bring that stuff up. Like, she's so good in the ring and she's on the mic even, that I think you could do so much with her. I think they've just kind of, with Chelsea, the stuff's been okay. I just think there's so much more with her. So Piper would be number one for me, technically, out of everyone. Then,
I'll pause you just for a second. I really think Piper Niven playing off of Chelsea Green has been a pleasant surprise. For people who are only going to be happy if Piper Niven is pushed as a centerpiece main event act, obviously this is not immediately in that vicinity. But I think you should enjoy this while you can. Chelsea's a great character. She's, you know, super effective and I think entertaining and convincing in her role. I pretty much like everything that she does in this role, even though it's, you know, lower card and she's not a serious wrestler. Like, she's somebody who I think they're going to work hard to find TV time for. And Piper Niven is sort of the pouty sidekick. I don't know. Like, her body language, her reactions to Chelsea, it took a couple injuries, but it's an unexpected chemistry with them. And so I like that, but I think it's a type of thing where the phrase cult following is probably overused and not perfect here, but Piper Niven with a new fan base who didn't know her reputation coming in and knew her more as Doudrop than anything, they're getting to see her be multidimensional in terms of the facial expressions and body language and playing off of Chelsea. And it is the type of, I think, tag team situation where she can eventually split off, beat the heck out of Chelsea, turn babyface, and then rise through the ranks into a more serious singles role. I would say don't rush it. You know, start looking at that 6, 8, 10 months from now. But let them kind of become a legendary comedy twosome, but always keep the credibility there for Piper Niven in the meantime. So that jumps out to me. I know I threw to you and you've got more to say, so go ahead, Sean.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because, no, I have liked what they've done with Piper and Chelsea, like, together. Like, it's been good. I just know there's so much more they can get out of Piper. There's so much more there. And I just wish that eventually they can get to that. And I don't know how they'll do that, but I hope they can because Piper's just so good. My next one, still Zoe. I still think Zoe's, you know, doing okay right now. Like, they had her with Trish, which was fine. There's something big they had for her at the beginning. And they're kind of getting her with Shayna, hopefully maybe doing something with them here in the near future as a tag team. And then eventually get Zoe back on a singles run. I think Zoe's got a lot of upside. I'm really excited about where they could still go with her. She's the one I've always liked when I saw her in NXT, Nate. I did like her a lot, too. Shayna, I just think so far gone, I don't think they can really bring Shayna back at this point. I think she's kind of just is where she is. And it's unfortunate because she was so good in NXT as a champion. Like, they booked her, Triple H booked her so well.
Oh, God, she was.
Oh, she was just a badass. And then they had her bite Becky, and that was it. It was like, whoop, we're done. That's all you can do. There's no way to come back from it.
I pushed that out of my brain, man.
I think the only other one that I think there's still potential in, I know she is, they haven't done anything with her either, is I still like Candice LeRae. I mean, I saw a little bit of her on the indies, and then NXT, like, she was, you know, she was okay, but it was like, it's hard for her because she's Johnny Gargano's wife, and that's kind of hard, I think, for her to, like, kind of her to be on her own. Potential with her, I really do. I think if they could get her to singles.
Sean, let me ask Nate that, because you've seen so much of Candice LeRae. And on the main roster in WWE, she's been portrayed as, like, a level 3 or borderline level 2 competitor. She's there to enhance other talent. But I've never gotten the sense on the main roster that management is like, oh, yeah, we see her. We want to protect her and get her ready for a main event someday. What did you think of her work during her time in NXT? And is she in the right spot probably on the main roster, or do you think they're selling her short?
So I'm going to preface this with, I'm a huge Candice LeRae fan, big Johnny Gargano, Ciampa, The Way, those guys, those are my guys. But I think Candice is probably, and I hate saying it, but I think she's probably where she's going to be. If they wound up kind of putting a little bit, trying to strap a rocket or something to her at this point, I'd be very pleasantly surprised, but I'd be surprised. In NXT, I don't even remember if she had, she must have had a shot at the women's title. I'm trying to remember, but she was always kind of portrayed as, kind of like second or third tier, except for maybe when she hit The Way, with Johnny, Indy and Austin Theory. And then, well, actually, I was going to say Dexter Lumis, but Dexter Lumis came in after she left on maternity leave. So she's always kind of been a bit of a background player. I think that she probably could have I think she has it within her to, be a potentially in the main event. As champion, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if she does. If she'd have the ability to kind of carry the company as women's champion. I'd love to see her prove me wrong, but I don't know necessarily. Tonight I liked the fact that the commentary was putting Indy and Candice over. Talking about their accolades in NXT, Indy especially, kind of talking about her being the former NXT champion, but they mentioned the fact that they were both NXT women's tag champions for a little while as well, which is not something that they always do. They don't always talk about, NXT accolades, so I was glad that they brought that up. There's another name, too, that I started thinking about after I stopped talking the first time and you guys kind of started talking again about the subject. But another name, actually, I guess either so one name, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. Now, Alba Fire, I think you could push her as a singles competitor all day long. Absolutely fantastic on the mic. As Kaylee Ray in NXT UK, she was a phenomenal champion. She came down to NXT, name changed to Alba Fire and all of that. She, had a pretty good run. She, a few losses and whatever, but it was a good run. And I like the tag, the tag team with Isla Dawn. They complement each other very, very well. I don't know if Isla Dawn necessarily has it to be like a singles right now. I'd have to think about that a little bit more, to be honest with you. But Alba Fire, at least, she certainly sticks out to me as somebody that I think is a little underutilized. And if was to break away, from the tag team thing and kind of did her own thing as a singles for a bit, I think they could have a great heel on her hands there.
Very good. Glad to get your perspective, Nate, and also your Sean. Sean, anything else that you want to bring up?
One more name I just wanted to bring up real fast was Katana. Yeah. I do think eventually Katana could be an underdog babyface for sure. Like, absolutely. I think if they, they lose the tag team titles at some point, which they will. That's a foregone conclusion. They will, because I have to, because I can't have it forever. I think she will be definitely a good underdog babyface if she continues to, get better in the ring and is good on the mic and can continue to develop the mic skills. I think she could be really good. I mean, there's a lot of upside there for me, for sure. The last thing I was going to bring up to you guys, because I was curious, with Kaiser and the stuff with, like, Xavier tonight, the one thing I have loved about recently is they're at least more serious now. Thank God. I mean, if you're going to have them together, at least have a feud where at least they're serious and they're wanting to beat somebody up and they're wanting to, to beat someone and not just tell a bunch of dumb jokes and act crazy. And so that's been fine with the stuff with Kofi last week. I mean, Kaiser just, I mean, I think there's so much upside in Kaiser. I think the world of him. I like him every time I see him wrestle. I think his promos are really good. I like just, you know, everything he does. I really enjoy it. And even with Xavier tonight, even though I can't really stand him, honestly, but I mean, the match was fine for what – I didn't like the finish of the match. I still think even though you're fighting, you're mad at him, you're frustrated, you're, you know, you have a lot, all that, you know, so-called rage, I still think you should know to not do that before the bell rings or else you're going to get disqualified. I just think that is kind of weird to me. If you're a face, if you're a heel, yeah, it makes sense. Face doesn't make as much sense. So what have you thought about Kaiser? Do you think that they see the same upside in him that I think we do? And where do you think they're going? And then just talk about Gunther tonight, because I enjoyed him just being back. I mean, he's just such a great presence. I'm just loving what he's doing with the Intercontinental title. I love everything about him. I just love him in general. And, Nate, I wanted to say, yes, I might be able to talk to you tomorrow night, because we've got, like, a bunch of snow on the ground. And I'm in Tennessee, and snow for us seems like Wade, we have way more snow than you have right now, which is crazy. So that's wild. But
I know.
Wade, I appreciate you giving me all the time.
Yeah.
Wade, thank you for all you do, man. I appreciate you. I thank you for all you do, man. Seriously, I love being a member of Go VIP, people. Again, I say this all the time. If you're not VIP, what are you doing with your life? Nate, I appreciate you, man. Always good to talk to you. And thank you guys for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Yeah, I want to talk Gunther, too. I appreciate the kind words. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. I'm not going to spend 8 minutes telling you all the benefits that come with VIP membership right now, but ad-free access to our website, mobile and desktop, almost 20 years now of podcast archives, roundtable reviews after every major pay-per-view, including all the rumbles. We run our on a regular basis on our VIP podcast RSS feed, 18 years ago podcast, some great history lessons and fascinating Torch style analysis, Wade Keller podcast style analysis of the rise of John Cena at a time when it's going to be Batista or John Cena who's on top, and what about Kurt Angle, and I mean on and on. It's just fascinating stuff listening back to those 18 years ago shows that we post throughout the week, and new content every day, VIP exclusive content, signature shows like everything with Rich and Wade early in the week, and the Fix with Todd Martin that I host with Todd late in the week. I don't think there's a better pro wrestling analyst out there right now than Todd Martin. And I don't think you can call yourself I don't know. I don't want to make any broad declarations, but I'll put it this way. You'll be a smarter, more well-informed, and have your critical thinking skills sharpened on why this business operates the way it does. Listening to Todd, we don't always agree. Sometimes I let it go. Sometimes we go back and forth on stuff. But it's a really entertaining and thoroughly informative podcast. And he brings so much to the mailbag every week in terms of history, really well thought out opinions. And then we just loosen up and have fun with questions that VIP members submit to us too. Just kind of different scenarios, ranking wrestlers and mock drafts and that kind of thing. It's a really great community of contributors, and Nate is a part of that with our NXT coverage. So I think I'm approaching 8 minutes here, but I encourage you to go VIP, check out details, pwtorch.com/GoVIP. This is the season to dive in and make us the centerpiece of how you follow wrestling other than what you watch on TV and see on social media. And I think it'll be worth it. And we're compatible with Apple Podcasts, with Spotify, and just about every podcast app out there in terms of syncing up our VIP feed with your phone or Apple CarPlay. All right. So Gunther, he's one of my favorite acts right now. What he does bell to bell, the way he carries himself, you can drop him into any era, and he could be a world champion heel in any territory in any era. I mean, you go back to the 50s, you go to the 70s, you look at the 90s. He's something special, and it's a crowded field. But I loved him holding up that Intercontinental title. I loved him touting what he did in the Rumble last year. And I loved adding his name to the mix of a plausible debate that you can have with your friends. If you want to be one of those people who says, yeah, everyone thinks it's going to be Cody or Punk, but you know what? I think it's going to be Drew. I think it's going to be Gunther. They're even trying with Shinsuke, you know. Nice try. I'm not buying it. But with Gunther, I think you can sort of buy it and go, especially if Seth is injured, then suddenly there's a whole new conversation you can have about the direction they go. Tonight was great. Nate, what stood out to you with Gunther, and how do you feel about him overall in the big picture?
I am so glad Gunther is in the position that he is in right now. I mean, the gimmick itself, just, you know, ring general and just – paying respect to the ring and the business in and of itself, it plays so well to a long-term champion. You know, like you said, you can pluck him out of today and put him in any era, and you know he would be an absolutely phenomenal heel for that territory. You know, one thing that I really like about Gunther is watching an interview with him. I forget who did the interview, but it was somewhere on YouTube. You know, he was talking about how one of his favorite things is when he comes out to the ring and he gets no reaction, and he has to build that reaction, and he has to, you know, tell through compelling storytelling in the ring, has to get the fans to get behind him, whether it's usually in a negative way, as a heel. But he does such a great job of that. He's got the fans in the palm of his hand. And he can just kind of just super intimidating. Really, really love the direction they've gone with him. And as a long term Intercontinental Champion, or I think at this point he's the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion, if I'm not mistaken. It's great. He's even going back to NXT. He's always been that guy where, you know, he might not be, because like in my head I think of him as like a Kane or a Big Show, right? Like he's, but maybe like a tier above that, because he's going to be kind of that gatekeeper. I feel like maybe he'll get like a token WWE title run or World Heavyweight Championship run, but I don't know if he's ever going to kind of have like the same type of a run he's had with the Intercontinental title with the main title. That said, he's somebody that I think you're always going to be like, oh, they're putting him in that spot. Like maybe he's got a chance, and it's going to seem credible just because of who he is and how brutal he is in the ring. Some of the most devastating chops that I think are out there right now. Really like what they're doing with him. And Imperium in general. I mean, I guess Kaiser I want to call him Fabian Aichner, but that's not his name anymore. Vinci, that's his name. Vinci's out with an injury. But Ludwig Kaiser, I think he's a phenomenal talent. I don't know. Like, I know Sean was kind of talking about him maybe kind of being in a bit of a better spot than he currently is. I don't know if I necessarily, like, I think I he could certainly do it. I don't know if I necessarily see that's where the company is going to kind of go with him. I think they still see him as Gunther's lackey. But that said, if he was to break away and try to do the singles thing at some point, like I certainly think he could have a decent run at it. I just wouldn't necessarily put him any more than kind of like a B tier player.
I would have no problem with Gunther as my centerpiece heel, holding a title, main eventing pay-per-views for 2 years. I that's how high I am on him right now. Ludwig Kaiser is on the upswing, but I don't think he's ever going to be Gunther's level. But I say I don't think, because I'm not sure. Like, he's really talented. His facial expressions are really good. Athletically, he's really delivering in the ring. You know, he doesn't, he doesn't have the Will Ospreay reputation, amongst fans. But he's building his case within the WWE style for being somebody whose matches you want to pay attention to, especially when he's against a good opponent. So it's a fun twosome right now. And yeah, obviously, hopefully Vinci makes a comeback. I do want to just, before we shift to mailbag, and by the way, we welcome more phone calls. If you're live streaming the show and want to join the conversation, the number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show, as Sean did. And we can talk about Seth, Gunther, Drew, and Cody, and anything else you want, Rhea Ripley and Becky too. I do want to give an update on Seth's attitude. I'm getting mixed signals from multiple sources. I've asked people what his mood was, and one person indicated he didn't seem too down, and another one said he seemed pretty bummed. So mixed indications for people who saw Seth's demeanor as he was walking, limping backstage, but told definitely not a storyline, definitely getting checked out medically. So it's somewhere between chipper and despondent, and different people are reading him differently. They might have seen him at different times too backstage after his match. But I was, you know, told specifically he didn't look happy, but also not necessarily like just despondent and pessimistic that for sure he's going to miss time. So I continue to ask you know, multiple people backstage about this, and I'll pass along any more information I get as we go. And you can check out pwtorch.com for the latest too. We've already got a new story up on it that's gaining traction on Reddit and other websites right now with the update. And it's at the top search return now. If you search Google Seth Rollins news, you'll see the pwtorch.com story that I managed to write and post while doing this podcast. Actually now I've got a third person, messaged and said that all things considered, he seemed, to have a good attitude. So we'll see. All right. We've got some emails to get to, and I want to start with one on Seth. This comes from Cy in, St. Austell, UK. Goes, I've given it years, but I still have no idea who Seth Rollins is other than the least authentic major character on the roster. It feels a little mean to be reading this given the circumstances, but he sent it in before Raw ended. I truly believe he's landed on this gimmick based on a Joker skit he did for a WrestleMania promo years ago. Is he a revolutionary, an architect, a visionary, or a gaudy clothing rack? And what do any of these mean for a serious wrestler? The best thing they can do is switch his cackling for an actual identity, take away his music, which is all they're cheering for, and turn him heel. This is such a waste. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people feel that way. People like to sing his music. I don't think Seth, even when he's been asked, Nate, about his character, gives a really clear-cut answer. I think he's just – he was a lost character. You know, Steve Austin and I would talk about that on his podcast. You know, Steve, you know, famously said, what is Seth freaking Rollins? Who is he? What's his identity? What are two or three things you would say about him other than a good wrestler with a raspy voice and a cackle, who they call the architect, but we don't really know why. And they've never explained it. So it's not just, you know, fans who don't like Seth saying it, even Steve Austin, who has an eye for that kind of thing, obviously, was like, who is Seth Rollins? What is Seth Rollins? And now he's found something he's gone with, and he's sticking with it, and it's outlandish and bombastic and colorful and over the top, but it still doesn't feel like anything you can really describe. Even when he, you know, closes promo, revolutionary and all this stuff, it's like it doesn't. It's just words. It's a word salad. Yet it seems to be working. But when you acknowledge he's married to Becky and he's a dad, it's like, well, you don't. Is he really this, or is it just a put on? But if it is just a put on, maybe that's okay in 2024 for him to go, yeah, when I'm in front of a crowd, I just like turning it up and being over the top. But when I'm at home, I'm a normal guy. And, you know, I mean, maybe that's fine. Maybe that's the best Seth can do because he isn't clearly anything else in particular. You have much more of a sense of who Gunther is when you watch him. You have more of an idea of who CM Punk is. What do you think, Nate, of Seth? Does this feel like a gimmick pasted on top of a wrestler who spent years searching for an identity and he's going with it because his music is catchy and at least it's something, even if you can't pinpoint what it is?
So, you know, it's actually funny we bring this up because the last time I was on the show, this is how we ended the show, was talking about Seth Rollins and who Seth Rollins is. And reason being is I actually brought it up. I had seen earlier in the week, that week, so it was a couple of months ago at this point, you know, Kevin Nash had said something along the lines of he wasn't quite sure who Seth Rollins was, but then he was kind of thinking about it, and he's like the modern day Macho Man. And you and I talked a little bit about that a couple of months ago, and you know, we both kind of agreed like that's kind of the case. You know, it was a little like over the top and flamboyant, very similar to Macho Man, but you know, it's and ever since we've had that conversation, I've kind of looked at Seth Rollins through that lens a little bit more, and I still don't even think that saying he's the modern day Macho Man describes what Seth Rollins is. You know, it's actually funny. A friend of mine, you know, Josh, he's a wrestling fan, but he drops off and then comes back, you know, years later and things like that, and keeps up with wrestling through me. And he was actually watching Raw tonight, and we were kind of talking a little bit about it, you know, through text. And that was what he was asking me. He's like, what's up with Seth? And I'm trying to actually, like, describe what's going on with Seth. He's like, did he go crazy? Is he becoming the Joker, you know, or something? And I was actually legit having trouble describing like what the gimmick is. I'm like, I kind of just said he's over the top. He's a little flamboyant, loves to laugh. I forget my exact words, but you know, so yeah, it's, you know, like you said, Wade, it's working. People like it. People are latched onto it. But for me, like personally, I think, you know, I kind of feel a little bit like the emailer does, where maybe not quite to that extent, but I'm kind of like, I don't want to say over the gimmick, but to me, it's just, I want to see what his next crazy outfit's going to be, really, you know. That's kind of the biggest draw for it for me right now. You know, I like what he's doing, but I feel like there could be more there, and I can't put my finger on what, but it's not connecting with me very, for a lot of the reasons that you said, you know, and the biggest being, you know, and I mean, obviously everybody at the end of the day in the wrestling business, they go home and they're normal people, but they kind of brought that into Seth Rollins' character and his storyline about it, what was it, a year ago, a little less than a year ago, something like that. Actually, yeah, it was definitely less than a year ago. But, you know, talking about how he is a dad and you know, a husband and all of that. And he kind of started to bring shades of real life into the feud with Shinsuke. But then, you know, he's still cackling and he's wearing all these outlandish outfits. And it's like, it is kind of hard to try and figure out, okay, is this something that you're just doing, being a little over the top, almost kind of akin to like Finn Balor bringing the demon out, I guess. Like, is this just something you do when you've got to do it, right? Or when the camera's on, or what? But yeah, for me, it's, you know, I kind of wish they would move on, or he would move on to something a little bit more substantial that you could try to explain. but I don't know if he's capable at this point.
It's been such a long journey. I just think he's like, all right, I can just at least be something and, you know, be over the top, a little bit of Jesse the Body Ventura and a little bit of whatever. I mean, he's you know, different. He's mentioned different wrestlers that he's kind of a blend of. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a better suggestion, but I know that because of the hard pushback that some people have for this, you know, I am wondering if it's limiting him to seem like he's sort of this pasted on cartoonish, bombastic, flamboyant character that doesn't feel authentic. And does that actually work against his upside? But he's got to hold people's attention, the mainstream casual fans' attention, while on television, and just walking out there and being Seth and just being serious, and doing a, you know, more straightforward, you know, NFL quarterback promo. I mean, I don't know that he's great at that either. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's that interesting if you take that away. So I guess I would stay the course until I hear something that just seems like it will actually fill television time better. You know, but the guy who's flamboyant and bombastic and colorful with a entrance theme people like to sing, who's also sort of a guardian WWE not being discounted as a place where really good in-ring work happens, and being a defender of the WWE style at its highest level, is something that can kind of work on two levels. You know, he can have his gimmick, but then there's also how Seth, you know, talked to Will Ospreay back in the day and how he's addressing CM Punk as a locker room leader and playing off of that. Maybe it can work on two levels, and fans can kind of just pick which version they want to think of when they think of him. All right, let's shift to our next email. Fred Morin says, go VIP, everyone. Thank you, Fred, for the recommendation. He says, I want to ask a question about Rhea Ripley. Is she reaching a popularity point where it's impossible to book her as a heel like Rock in 98, 99? Yes. I mean, the short answer is yes. I mean, I don't know that there's many women that I don't think there's many opponents who can get cheered against Rhea Ripley, but maybe Becky is one of them. Because I think fans would be like, we'll cheer Rhea against anyone except Becky because we love Becky, and maybe that'll work out fine. Nate, your thoughts on Fred's question?
Could you actually read the email just one more time real quick?
Is Rhea Ripley getting too popular to Booker's heel?
I don't think Rhea Ripley can get too popular. I think she's doing a phenomenal job with what she's doing right now. I think it's like, obviously, you know, Judgment Day being kind of, you know, a heel faction and she's getting cheered and things like that. I think eventually they might need to address that. But for now, I think they just kind of keep going the course of what they're doing. It seems to be working. People are heartily behind her. I don't think there's such a thing as too popular for Rhea Ripley.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. Nia Jax, she's going to get cheered against her. WWE doesn't seem to be scared of it. Clearly, the trajectory she's on is to become a babyface. And my hunch is, whatever happens with Becky, there's a mutual respect that's earned as opposed to the feud ends like bitterly with, you know, Becky winning and then Ripley being upset about it and going on a rampage and being more of a heel. My answer to the question is I think they are on a trajectory less than 6 months of her being a babyface. How they get there is going to be a fun journey to watch, though. All right,
absolutely.
Up next. Yeah. Up next, Steve in Baltimore says, what would you think if they put the world title on the line in the Rumble itself, similar to the 1992 Rumble where Ric Flair won the title? So if they do that, you have to get Cody or Punk into their title match or The Rock, into their title match in a different way than was planned. If Cody was going to win the Rumble, they got to change plans on that. It completely changes the way that they tell the WrestleMania story if one of the two title match challengers isn't determined based on winning the Rumble, and instead it's you winning the title. But it is a way to, you know, get the title on Drew or Punk and then have Drew and Punk as the backup match, Punk babyface, Drew a heel, if Seth is out. I would think you don't want Cody winning the world title and then getting detoured from beating Roman, because that Roman title is the one that, you know, Cody's journey is heading towards. So yeah, Nate, what do you think about the possibilities there?
Yeah, the question was having the Rumble actually for the WWE Championship, correct?
Say that again, Nate.
The question was having the Rumble
The winner of the Rumble would win the vacated title from Seth.
It could work. But you know, as you said, you know, Cody's story needs to end with the WWE title, Universal title, whatever you want to, Undisputed title, whatever we want to call it right now. That's Roman's title. That's the story that Cody needs to end on 100%. I could certainly see it working. And I mean, heck, you could even throw a swerve in there where, you know, it doesn't matter who wins the Royal Rumble, because maybe Priest comes out and cashes in Money in the Bank right after and wins or something like that. That to me is kind of like the most compelling. I'd love to see something like that. Actually, like you have, cause like the Royal Rumble's my favorite match of the year. So I'm kind of trying to think of if I would love it, if I would hate it. If you kind of see like Drew McIntyre or somebody else that you really want to see win the title, win the world heavyweight title, win that belt in that match. And then immediately Priest comes down, cashes in and walks away with the belt. That would be, I think that would be cool. I think that would be compelling and interesting. I think it would kind of all depend on, you know, whether this is a, you know, going to keep Seth out or not. But that's kind of what the first thing that springs to my mind anyway.
All right, let's go to our next email. And this comes from JB in Detroit. He's got four topics. One, I think Drew's promo about Cody being the smiling, jovial, verbose company man is a bit too close to reality. He didn't use those words, by the way, exactly. Smiling, yes. He said, I think it's a problem people have had with Cody for years, even if it's only in the back of their minds. I'm not sure it's a great idea to point that out, being a heel, as Drew seems to be leaning. So, yes, Drew, definitely leaning heel. I'm trying to look up the quote here from Drew, if I can find it here in my report. But, yeah, I was like, this is what I'd say in response to the email. If Cody didn't have a good response, I'd be against it. But I think fans like Cody because of what Drew's criticizing him for. The phrase that I was looking for is, you're not running for office. He says, you don't need to smile all the time either. And he said he did it too at one time, but when he was angry, frustrated, and sad, he had to be the beacon of light for the roster and be the leader. But he told Cody to be the real Cody. If anyone has an issue with the new Cody, he can drop their R. So, Nate, what do you think of Drew and the point that JB is bringing up?
Yeah, you know, Drew is, you know, we've kind of talked about him quite a bit tonight, but, you know, I think he's on the right track here. What was the point that JB said again? I'm sorry.
He said the point about Cody being smiling, jovial, and verbose company man is too close to reality.
Yes. I'm very used to having emails in front of me so I can read them as we're getting back to them. I think it's a fair criticism. I think it is a fair criticism, and I think there are a lot of people that kind of don't necessarily like Cody for that reason. I know, you know, that's something I've read quite a bit online, you know, criticism of him going all the way back to, you know, AEW and you know, the beginnings of AEW. You know, he just kind of seems too corporate and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like that is Cody. Like, he's taking...
I'm sorry to jump in, but that's the absolute key point is, I think fans think Cody is authentic in almost running for office, wearing a suit, smiling, being the company guy. If it felt pasted on as a tactic to get over, people would reject it. But
yeah.
Drew's criticism, while it rings true on the surface, doesn't sting in the way that JB is concerned about, because people think Cody is a genuine, authentic company man who loves his job, loves the fans, and everything comes from the heart. And so when Cody has a response to that criticism, it's okay for the heel to levy it.
Yeah. And I mean, because, you know, you take Cody in the ring, or, you know, I guess in the show and out of the show, right? And it's really tough to kind of discern who's who. It's almost like it's the same person. You know, Cody Runnels, Cody Rhodes is, I mean, I'm sure there's some differences there, but it's kind of like the same person. You listen to, you know, any interview that he's done, you know, outside the ring, or, you know, any interview he's kind of given to, you know, journalists and whatnot. You know, he just sounds very much like he does in the, you know, in when he's doing a promo or whatever. It's not like he's really changing his demeanor, his attitude. It's just, he's kind of, you know, as everybody says, you know, the best gimmick is just taking yourself, dialing it up to 11. And that's what he's doing. So yeah, no, I agree. I don't think it's really going to kind of harm him, you know, in any way.
All right, let's go to JB's next point. Do you think that Michael Cole kept mentioning how the crowd had braved severe weather conditions multiple times was because the crowd is a bit smaller than they had anticipated due to poor weather? Yeah, Albright said it actually at one point. He goes, the crowd's smaller tonight because of the snowstorm in this area that's not used to getting it. There's a fan in the front row saying, I shoveled a lot of snow to get here tonight.
Saw that.
Little Rock, Arkansas, you know, I don't know how many people keep snow shovels around. I doubt there's much snow there ever. So, yeah, I mean, and it's fair. You know, people know there's a lot of stuff going on. Football game got delayed, and, you know, I mean, snow, the Iowa caucus is tonight. You know, the weather was going to be a concern. It is quite the winter. It's been, you know, zero and below zero here in Minnesota, even just with a light coating of snow on the ground, nothing heavy. So, yeah, it's fair to say that. And, you know, it was a smaller crowd than usual, and it was a little more echoey in that venue. But it didn't hurt the show to me. I mean, I thought the crowd was enthusiastic, and I enjoyed the show and wasn't dwelling on the crowd being sparse in certain areas where normally they'd be more packed.
Yeah, there was really only one shot that I remember seeing tonight that made me go, oh, that crowd looks small. But for the most part, I mean, they did a great job, as they always do, kind of shooting the crowd and making it look like, you know, it's bigger than it is.
What have you thought of, if you've been paying close attention to Michael Cole and Wade Barrett as a commentary team, just as a brief aside here, because I am a really big fan of these two. I think Wade Barrett's just doing tremendous work, and I think Cole's at the top of his game. How's it jumping out to you, Nate?
No, I would agree with you 100%. Like, Michael Cole, I am, ever since Vince is no longer in his ear, I feel like Michael Cole is really coming into his own. I mean, and you know, say what you want about Michael. You know, there's a lot of people want to crap on him and whatever, but I mean, he's been the voice of WWE now for what, 25 years almost, if not 25 years. So I think right now he's honestly doing his best work now that he doesn't have Vince in his ear and he kind of can be a little bit looser with what he's saying. Wade Barrett is one of the better announcers, I think, in NXT, or commentators rather, in NXT right now, or in WWE right now, starting in NXT. You know, he was, God, I loved my favorite NXT trio was Vic, Wade, and Beth Phoenix. They did a phenomenal job together. And, you know, now it's Vic and Booker T. I'm not a huge fan of Booker T on commentary, but Wade Barrett, you know, he brings not only his ring acumen to what he says on commentary, but he's very sharp. You know, he can come up with things right on the fly. And I think the two of them play off each other extremely, extremely well. So yeah, I'm all for that pairing right now.
All right, very good. And finally, from JB, do we think that the Seth Jinder main event was strong enough to hold the viewership in an hour three against a playoff Monday Night Football game? As always, love the show, and everyone go VIP, 4! So if you're on the fence, come on. He typed 4! That means you should go VIP. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Nate, no. The answer's no. This match was there because they knew they're going up against an NFL football game, and they knew it was going to be tough, and they need main events. And, you know, I mean, Jinder is a respected member of the locker room. Nobody mistakes him as a centerpiece star, but there's not like, you know, animosity or vitriol towards him getting a main event match. He's a serviceable, he's in the right place at the wrong time type guy. I don't think it's going to come out that he was at fault for Seth's injury. I'd have to, you know, rewatch the match to see, but I don't think there's any indications that that's the case at this point. If it is, there'll be heat on him. I don't think there is. And so this is WWE just going, let's give Seth a win against a former champion. We use Jinder in the segment as a teaser, almost a joke of a reveal as a former champ returning. It got a ton of views on social media, and WWE's like, well, with these billions and billions of views on social media, not quite, but close, let's get something out of this. And so they just parlayed it into a quick title match. I'm fine with it. I know how they work hard to try to come up with novel main events, so they don't want to recycle the same matches. And given the context, you know, hour three is almost always hundreds of thousands of viewers fewer than hours one and two. So it's not, they're not pretending that it's going to be bigger than that. That said, with the moving part of Damian Priest, the cash-in, the intrigue of a rare world title match on television, I mean, I don't think it's going to bomb. I mean, it's Seth Rollins. It's the world title match. Whoever's in it, WWE fans who don't care about the NFL or are keeping an eye on the score in another way might want to watch to see how it played out. So I think it'll do fine, but it's certainly not going to pop a rating more than usual. I would be real surprised by that. Nate, how about you?
Oh yeah, I'll be honest. I'm gonna defer to you on that. When it comes to ratings, I listen to you. So I'd agree. I mean, you know, I'm not a huge sports fan myself, so I would have been watching Raw tonight anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I tend to agree with you. Yeah.
What do you think of the R-Truth humor? How's it working for you?
Oh God, it is so good. It's so good. It's my favorite thing on Raw right now. It really is.
It's a good transition. I'm not a sports fan, but I love R-Truth. It's
but I love
service, you know
R-Truth.
What I mean? They're not going for sports fans with this.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think it's absolutely hilarious. I mean, he thinks he's part of a faction and he's not. You know, even the match tonight, like I was dying. I thought this was just some great work out of R-Truth. You know, he's just a national treasure. He really is. He got Damian Priest to break a little bit during their backstage segment at one point, just for a moment, but you could see a smirk on Priest's face. It's yeah, and I mean, I think I saw something earlier in the week that like that Live Laugh Love shirt was the best seller last week or something like that. I mean, I know, and obviously they alluded to that tonight with the whole angle. But man, like I hope that man never retires. He still looks like he's in his 30s, and I hope he's like Keanu Reeves. He just never ages and he stays as funny and hilarious till the end of time.
Very good. Nate, anything else you want to bring up from tonight's show before we sign off?
No, nothing else I can think of offhand. No.
All right, cool. Well, we went 90 minutes and, or more, and, had some good emails, good conversation with Sean, and got some breaking news coverage as the show progressed. So, good episode. Good having you on with so much NXT talent to get your perspective and analysis of all that. And, check out, PWT Talks NXT. It drops late Tuesday nights on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Search PW Torch on your podcast app. And subscribe to the Daily Cast lineup, different show every day of the week with a different theme, different hosts, including the best show dedicated to NXT you'll find anywhere and the longest running show covering NXT on a weekly basis. And then while you're at it, search Wade Keller and subscribe to both shows if you haven't yet, the blue and red logo shows. And check out our website, pwtorch.com, for breaking news, originally sourced breaking news on a regular basis, live TV and pay-per-view coverage, flashback articles from 5, 10, 15 years ago, and editorials and special features. That's pwtorch.com. All right, everybody, we're in for a big 2 weeks here in the lead-up to the Rumble, and we'll continue to cover it for you, and we'll be by Wednesday night after Dynamite. But first, on our Blue Logo Show, the flagship this week features Jason Paul from ProWrestling.net, and we'll be talking WWE, AEW, and more. So join us for that. Search Wade Keller and subscribe not just to this, the Red Logo Show, but also our regular podcast, The Blue Logo Show. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking Nate Lindberg and our callers and emailers and everybody else, and we'll talk to you next time.